and good morning. Welcome to another special edition of the weekend fabulous KPCW film panel. We're here with the League of Super Credits, meeting in the secret lair above the State Liquor Store in Sweet Alley.
A lot like the Avengers.
Yes,
Rick.
Yes, yeah. And do they also need proximity to a liquor store?
Yes.
They do. Okay. Yeah.
It's the secret powers.
Yes.
We can talk about that. We'll get into that.
Yeah. Okay. Introducing our panel, a longtime veteran of the Friday Film Review, Mark Harrington, who also in his daytime job delivers super legal opinions.
Good morning.
For City Hall. And we have a relatively new addition, KPCW reporter Emily Means, super millennial.
That's my superpower, Rick.
Yeah, the superpower, yes.
She doesn't need caffeine.
Yes, yes.
She comes wired.
Yes, and... And we have a new person on our Friday film review panel, Wendy Gourley, who is a funds development manager for KPCW.
Hello.
She develops super funds.
not like that.
Okay,
no.
we'll have to come up with a different term. But we're just trying to wrap up the summer a little bit here, and I know the summer's ended because for the first time this morning I had to scrape one of the windows on my car, to scrape the frost off. So I know the season is changing.
And, oh my goodness!
Looking back on the last two or three months, we'll just start kind of in general with Mark. Your kind of highlights and lowlights, and doesn't necessarily have to be in the movie theater, but just what was interesting for you?
Well, it was an interesting summer because I don't think overall it was a great summer for film in the theaters, but it was only down about 4% box office overall. So I think, you know, the global market and superheroes and the blockbusters continue to, you know, keep the big screen viable, and I think that's a good thing for all filmmakers, but overall it was a pretty disappointing summer, I think. But if you knew where to look, and we thankfully we have Sundance and a lot of art house films, you had a really broad array of smaller films that were exceptional. And then of course the booming, I think Emily and I described it as the new horror, non-horror category. And so you've got these very innovative films that are scary in your head versus scary in your seat kind of films, everything from the recent It 2 to Midsommar and films like that are really providing an alt boost to people who are seeking something different. And, you know, a little more intellectually engaging than the old horror slasher film. Mm-hmm. But specifically for me, I really liked, for themes, it was retro tunes again. I mean, I really liked Blinded by the Light. I think if we have one feel-good film like this every summer, in terms of something that uses the retro music scene with a compelling story, as opposed to Yesterday, which I think was more of a film about the Beatles, you know, a very great premise in terms of what if someone, only one artist had the ability to sing Beatles songs and remember who the Beatles were. But it was more of an exploitation, I think, of the song material as opposed to really delivering the story.
Kind of like a Twilight Zone story with Beatles music.
Right, yes, exactly. And whereas I thought, you know, Blinded by the Light was much more like, you know, 2016's Sing Street, you know, just a very fun, compelling coming-of-age story about, you know, taking on your parents versus following your dreams and becoming a writer. And then the doc lineup I thought was exceptional. And I think everything from Pavarotti to Miles Davis, A Birth of the Cool, to One Child Nation, you know, you just had exceptional documentary offerings all summer.
Yeah. A lot of that stuff, was it at previously at Sundance or...?
Two of the three. And Pavarotti, you know, a little bit more dissension on that because it was such a tribute film instead of an objective, you know, assessment of his life, you know, both good and bad. Whereas Miles Davis, just the opposite. I think it was much more of a technical chronicling of his career that probably taught people a lot about the genesis of his music and his personal transitions and innovations that the general public probably has no idea of, but lacked a little bit of, you know, a spotlight on his personal demons other than just showing the result, which was, of course, just the downfall from heroin addiction and all that.
And Emily, your highlights and lowlights, and maybe Mark mentioned a few that you guys have talked about, but yeah.
Just this morning for 30 seconds we talked about it, but Mark, you saw a lot of movies this summer. Do you do a film review or something? So I was looking back, trying to remember what I had seen this summer. And in theaters, you know, I only came up with 4 films, so maybe I'm not qualified to be on this film panel, but I feel like I'll still bring a little something.
I think you probably exceed me.
So 2 of the 4 of them were superhero movies, and I think that summer is increasingly becoming the season of superhero films, right?
Yeah.
So I saw Avengers Endgame, which was the cap on the first phase of Marvel films. And then right after that was Spider-Man Far From Home. And Wendy and I actually did a podcast extra on KPCW's website discussing this. And, you know, I've seen just about every Marvel's film except for Thor 2, which was just so boring that I could not bring myself to finish it. And for me, Spider-Man Far From Home was really underwhelming after the momentous occasion that Avengers Endgame was. It was a cute movie, but you know, it's kind of Marvel moving into actually their next phase. You know, this was the kickoff of Phase 2 for the Marvel's film universe. But I think for a different generation of superhero film goers. You know, it was really geared toward a younger audience, even younger than me, Rick. So so that's my take on the superhero films for this summer.
Yes. So you were saying that they are starting another phase.
Right.
And I was kind of I didn't know how this worked. I thought maybe with the end game that, okay, so they're going to stop doing this now?
Oh, no, Rick.
No.
There's more.
There's always more.
So actually, you know, this is something that Marvel announced at San Diego Comic-Con, and it's always a big thing every year. You know, ooh, what's coming down the pipeline for Marvel? And the direction they seem to be going, they've definitely got some more films coming up, but the cinematic universe is also now translating to more of a TV series kind of format. So I think it's coming with Disney's new streaming service, another streaming service.
Yeah.
And we'll see a lot more from Marvel on that end of things,
I
think.
Yeah, Marvel, they've got stuff on TV. They've got streaming. Just out of curiosity, are you one of those folks that at the Marvel Pictures, do you stay through the entire credits?
You have to, Rick.
So you can see the little capper at the end?
Yes, because now we know that they've got these hidden gems during the credits, right? So you've got your first hidden gem, and then you've got your second hidden gem, and then maybe there's a third one. So you have to stay through the entire film way past when the credits start rolling. So that's a good way to put a cap on superhero movies for the season. But I also saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I know Mark did that film review. I love Quentin Tarantino films. This film I did not love. It was, and Mark, I know you probably thought it was way too long. Like, I thought it was way too long.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in the camp of unfortunately, there's post-Sally Menke for Quentin Tarantino and pre, and that's his longtime editor who passed away suddenly in 2010, I believe. I think it's good and bad. I mean, at this point in his career, I think Tarantino is just like, what the bleep? I can do whatever I want. Yeah. I have control, and I want to make the film I want to make. And you saw no better example than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It was not only just a tribute film, the background and set and time period was its own character, or if not narrative, in his story, which was genius. I think the adaptive component of this pivotal moment in history around the Manson murders was brilliant. But I just think, again, it was at 80% execution. He needed to be reined in. He needed a good editor.
Did we need 2 hours of Brad Pitt driving around California?
And
well, that's
without editing, his dialogue that otherwise shows through gets a little bit, you know, you're waiting for it. And I think everyone, and nobody went to see that film who wasn't a Tarantino film, I think, for the most part. And people were restless waiting for the next best part,
right?
Was my sense sitting in the audience. And now that's a little unfortunate, although I get, if we had more rain this summer, that's a great, you know, matinee afternoon film to just lounge in and throw back, contemplate, you know, the themes that he was trying to underlie throughout the film.
Yeah.
Granted, he's a brilliant filmmaker, but geez.
You
walk out of there and
you
just go, well, that was Tarantino.
Yeah, and I'll jump in on that a little bit. That was my favorite of the summer season.
Yeah, you really like this one.
Yeah, because it was I can't
but
deny.
But you're an encyclopedia. You're a walking encyclopedia.
I can't deny, you know, your criticisms, but it's just like marinating you in the culture of the late 60s. And driving around, well, you know, I mean, that's L.A. culture. I mean, that's the high point of your life is to just get in a fancy sports car and drive around. You're on top of the world and all that. And certainly, you know, you guys are right. The thing was too long. I mean, we could have used a lot less of Leonardo DiCaprio in the making the Lancer episode. The Western, I'll just say that I don't want to give away the ending because we'll discuss spoilers later. But it's interesting that I always love to see what music Tarantino uses, and he ends the movie with a theme from the John Huston picture Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, which the tagline was, maybe this isn't the way it was, but it's the way it should have been, and that was, I think, Tarantino's message.
Well, so. If I may, I'd like to compare that movie to the last new movie I saw this summer, which is Midsommar. And this is the one that's kind of a horror film, but mostly in your head. But is it really a horror film kind of thing from director Ari Aster, I believe his name is.
Yes.
And this movie was also 3 hours long. It was the movie I saw just before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it was the same sort of thing where I was like, what exactly is the point of this? And why am I sitting here for 3 hours? And okay, director, I get it. This is your baby. This is your artistic vision. But at what point, you know, are you giving anything to the audience? So it was a movie that I left saying, I don't really know what happened, but I guess it was a good enough experience. So I guess that's the summary of my summer movie going.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll take a break and we'll be back and we'll ask Wendy to talk about what she saw on her summer vacation.
Sounds good.
I'm Renee Bodley Miller.
I'm Doug Wells.
I'm Roger Goldman. Every Monday morning, we talk about money.
How to make money, save money, and grow it.
From the newest local business to interesting developments in the world of business and finance at large.
Listen every Monday morning at 9, right after NPR News at the top of the hour, and add value to your day.
Presented by Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Columbus Pacific Development with Pendry and Apex Residences.
I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, and Sunday mornings is a sacred space in many ways. You occupy this sort of in-between time that in many ways allows you to reflect on what has happened in a more thoughtful way, but also look forward to what is coming and try to sort of get on top of the news. Listen to Weekend Edition every Sunday.
Listen every Sunday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. right here on KPCW.
Welcome back to our fabulous film panel. We're kind of looking back on the summer, and we have to find out from Wendy. I mean, what were your highlights and lowlights of
the? Well, the movies that are just sticking in my head that I keep thinking about tend to be the recent rock bios or rock songbook inspired movies, partially just because we've had a slew of them. And so I've just been kind of comparing it doesn't feel quite like a trend like the dog narrated movies that we're getting so many
what
of.
Who's talking? What who's talking or something? Or
well, like a dog's purpose or a dog's life or a dog's, I don't know, fill in the blank. They all feel very different. Going back to Bohemian Rhapsody, which was in the summer, but that was pretty much a straightforward bio, movie. And then we had Rocket Man, who I'm just a huge fan of, partially because I love musicals. My background is more theater and musical theater. And the way they used the music to me was just stunning. They took Elton John's songbook, and at some point it's a straightforward concert restaging of the song, but then in the next minute that song could be scoring. It could be a very deeply character driven moment where we've never heard that music sung in that way, and the performances I thought were incredible. I honestly felt like it was almost a new genre of modern musical, similar maybe to La La Land, but I thought so much better. I mean, the music was so much better.
Well, La La Land almost got an Oscar by mistake.
Well, yeah, that was a painful moment.
So Rocket Man is, you'd say, Oscar-worthy.
Well, in my book, movies and stories are very personal things. And so for me, that was something that just wowed me. I mean, it totally wowed me and felt like it was emotionally kind of gutting the way they used the music and told the story. I loved the fantasy elements, but it was consistent, it was concise. The way that they put that together, they used a device that they cleanly use, which I would compare to Blinded by the Light, which I'm going to probably go the opposite of Mark in that. I wanted to love that movie too, because I had loved Yesterday and all these others that came before. And I found it to be incongruent in its devices. So they did some interesting things. I loved the scene where there's this maybe almost a hurricane or something in the area, and he's out trying to throw away his poems, and they start swirling around him like a tornado, and there's Bruce Springsteen lyrics being, projected on the walls, and that was really cool. And even the opening, I thought, oh, maybe this is going to kind of look like a movie video. That might be interesting. I wonder what this is going to look like. And then it just kind of went back to a regular movie. And then they had this scene that, it's definitely seemed heightened reality. And then they went back to regular, style movie making. And then there was a couple of scenes that looked lifted out of a Bollywood musical, which were fun too, but
kind of appropriate for a Pakistani British.
Exactly. And so, but the thing I had a problem with, it, I just felt distracted me and took me out of the story, because for me, it's all about the story. Like, whatever choices you make as a filmmaker should serve the story above all else, I feel like. It shouldn't be like, like Quentin Tarantino, like, look at what I can do. What actually serves the story, would make a stronger film in my book. That's just kind of my bias and where I come from. And I felt like those elements ultimately distracted me from the story, because if it had been this world that they wanted me to enter into, like the Elton John movie, I'll go in, jump in with both feet. But not if you're going to, yank me around and do things that feel like inconsistent. Mm. So because then I start looking at that and trying to figure that out, and I'm no longer thinking about the story, right? Mm. So that's kind of how I feel. And I have to admit, I adored Yesterday. I know it wasn't as well made as some of the other films, but maybe it's just because I was in the mood to just go and have a fabulous time. I literally went and saw that four times. I've never seen any movie four times, but I just had different friends that said, you haven't seen that yet? Let's go. And I just went back and, you know.
Well, you're like on Star Wars level.
Yeah, I guess so.
With four times.
And maybe I just connect and love the Beatles music more than Bruce Springsteen. You know, like I said, it's such a personal thing that why we connect and like movies. But for me, also the writing was clever, was fun. Blinded by the Light, especially by the end, I was honestly just going, like, did you like actually really just say that? it was kind of cheesy, and I felt like they were telling me what I should feel instead of just, catching me up in a feeling. And so that's, for me, were some of the down points. But I did love the story. It was based on a real book and a story of a Pakistani teen growing up in the late Margaret Thatcher era England. And it was that I there were parts that I really, really liked too.
So I'm going to go down the panel here, but since this does seem to be kind of a current genre, what do you want to see? You know, what other rocker do you want to see, either as a homage or a bio? Any particular interest?
Well, Jimi Hendrix popped into my head first, but honestly, if I'm being super honest, probably back to my musical theater roots, it's the one that's coming up in, I don't know, days, is Judy Garland's movie, Renee Zellweger. I'm super excited to see that.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to catch that at Telluride. So
wonderful.
Get set for that.
Did you like it?
Yes. The movie itself, fairly ordinary. Renee as Judy Garland, a mind-boggling.
Wow. Okay.
So,
didn't you see Renee Zellweger out on the street at Telluride?
Well, I saw she came out. She came out after the movie, which was she came out. She was dressed like a house painter's assistant, and had a little baseball cap pulled over her face. You know, it was very strange. After just watching her on the big screen transformed, it was very interesting. So, any rockers that you'd like to see get the treatment?
You know, I don't know, Rick. This was the one question, the one prompt that you sent out that I forgot to think about. but I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan, so maybe in that direction.
Well, I'll go opposite. I think it would be fun to see a compelling film about people, the songwriters behind the scene. Like, since this is a big songwriter weekend in Park City, in terms of, we've had the backup singers film, we've had, the other people in the band film, but I'd like to see like a breakout film about, Nashville singer-songwriters that haven't gotten their day. I mean, something. I think there's not to be corny, but of course there's so many stories behind the story writers, and to see that mind for something that was more thrown out to the world, I think is long overdue.
I think that's a fabulous idea. Just going and attending Songbird Cafe and the festival this weekend, there are so many fabulous stories behind those songs. Yeah. And great people.
Well, let's see if the summer, at least for me, it seemed to be kind of heavy duty on the remakes, and the Disney was went pretty heavy on that. I saw Dumbo it was okay, but not terribly impressed by Dumbo. Did anybody catch up to Aladdin or Lion King?
I saw Lion King and just went with my family, and they're kind of spectacular in their own way, but I just never find them super interesting. And because, it's just like watching the cartoon. Some of them, I think like Cinderella, I think that was their first one, seemed more interesting to me because they had some maybe more, adding more to the story. This one felt more like we were just watching the cartoon. And I mean, even though it's spectacular, I feel the same way when I see the Broadway version. It's fun, and it's to see the its own spectacle, but it's just not super interesting to me because I feel like I'm watching the cartoon.
Yeah,
it's perfect for airline travel with a young
with
child.
A child. Yes, but it serves
they
its
are,
purpose.
You know, they're well made, but they're retreads, and if you can, you know, start stop at will because you're not missing or losing place or whatever, and you got the. We're now at 10,000 feet and, you know, blasting through if you're dumb enough to use their airphones instead of your own.
I'm always cursing myself when I forget mine.
Download the app on your iPad. Use headless or cordless earphones.
You can
watch everything that you can watch on the monitor on your iPad.
Pro tip.
Go. Delta go.
Good technical tip.
Yes.
Another one that I think brought something new to the story was Pete's Dragon. You know, it was quite different from the original. And so it had some more interest what have they done with the story? Mm-hmm. And they are all well made. It's not that they're terribly made at all, but that one also had a little bit more interest to me.
So for me, you know, I'm not that far removed from the first time I saw these films, the original version.
Such a baby.
Because, you know, I'm just a child. But I feel like... having grown up watching those movies, I feel confident speaking for everyone in my age group on this particular topic. But, you know, those movies had such an impact on us. Watching Lion King when I was, you know, however old, or Aladdin, and experiencing that and singing along to it, to all of the tunes in the show, I don't see any value in going to the movie theater and watching, just like you said, Wendy, the exact same movie, but, you know, without those emotional connections that I had made when I was a child. Perhaps if I had children, I would see value in that. But to me, it just comes off as, you know, the budget is so much bigger using all this CGI, and they expect people my age who do have children to bring their children to it. So to me, it just seems like a money grab.
Yeah, or on the airline.
Look,
Connor, the hyenas. No.
Yeah.
I'll give one shout out to Toy Story 4 because I think that was a bit of an exception, and that was they didn't have to make that film. And if when they did, they could have just done a retread and really just exploited the same old, same old. And they took a huge risk in changing sort of the thread of the lead character, and it paid off. And I think they got, you know, they were able to bridge a gap between, you know, to a little bit more of a tweener audience, and, you know, Woody's self-discovery and in a new world had contemporary themes, and adults enjoyed it too. And I you know, I thought it was, you know, I really didn't want to go see that film, and of course I went with my 8-year-old, but, you know, it was better than I thought, and I, you know, they got rewarded for it.
Yeah, the sequel, and there is kind of a thin line between sequels and remakes that I was just watching out of the corner of my eye.
Or sequels of previously remade.
Yeah, sequels of previously, yes, that was... yesterday was Friday the 13th, so they were running a lot of the Friday the 13th pictures on AMC, and it was those are sequels that are remakes.
Yeah, you know, Toy Story, each 4 installments are a completely new story, honestly. And if you're going to do a remake, that's the way to do it. Pixar is probably our most successful studio out there, and they deeply understand the elements of story and how to use them.
Yeah, and they continue to kind of bore into that whole thing of, you know, what is the toys that are wondering what is their purpose, mm-hmm. when their owner grows up and goes to college or something, what
it's the universal theme we're all wondering.
yes Wendy, have you actually, you know, seen some of these Broadway things that are, you know, the Disney musicals or other movie properties that are turned into musicals? Have you had a chance to see any of those?
On stage?
Yeah.
Some of them, yes. And they are pretty much the experience that I have with The Lion King. They are, you know, spectacular. And sometimes they add in a new song or two that are amazing. I mean, everything they do is, you know, very high quality of production. But it feels the same to me. I'm not that interested in watching it. I want to see something that's new, that's going to make me think about something in a new way, or I once sat with, I shouldn't have brought this up because I can't remember her name, but she has consulted with Pixar, and she's travels all over the world talking about stories. And I was in a conference once and watched her do the keynote, and her thing that she talked about was stories prepare us for the change that are coming. And so we need to, you need to have some sort of that mind expanding, element that I hope in a story that helps us see ourselves in a new way or helps us broaden out our thinking little bit.
Yeah. Well, let me again run the panel here. But, I asked you to think about not just last summer, but just scan over the history of cinema and in terms of what remakes have you seen that were actually good or got closest to good as we could hope for. Mark is pointing to Emily. So.
this was tricky for me to think of because, I'm young, and I feel like I haven't seen the originals of everything, but I have seen the first chapter of It. The second one just came out. Mark, have you seen the second one already? Not yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we can head out after this panel and see It Chapter 2.
Yeah,
but
remake of a TV miniseries.
Right, and I did see that.
It's been on Broadway.
It on Broadway?
Of course. Everything else is going on Broadway.
They can make anything into a musical.
Yeah.
I'd love to
especially if Tim Curry's involved.
It's a musical. I'd love to see. Yeah.
So the miniseries, which I think is from the 80s or 90s, featured Tim Curry as Pennywise the Clown. Mm. And I remember watching the first part of that, and it was... I enjoyed it. But then the second part got really corny, and I think it was in part due to just the animation and, graphics available to them at the time that was made in the 80s or 90s. It Chapter 1, which came out last year around this time, I believe, was a great film, I thought. And I think... just having the access to the tech that we have now, the CGI that we have now, the chapter 2, which I haven't seen yet, will be an improvement to that second part of the miniseries, just based on the quality of the graphics.
Yeah,
so,
I really
enjoyed the film.
I mean, from the miniseries, did you like the kid portion more than the adult portion, the old TV version?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And I think I preferred it better, one, because I was a kid when I watched it, but also clowns just seem scarier when you're a kid. So same with the chapter one of this remake. I really enjoyed those younger actors and how they all interacted with each other, but also how they interacted with the main villain, Pennywise the Clown.
Yeah, and that could be the message, that actually, contrary to what they tell us as kids, clowns have always been scary.
They're always scary, especially murderous ones. But
Wendy, looking over the history of film, best remake that you can think of.
Well, we got one minute.
Okay,
well, I'll throw out, if I can come back to the topic, I'm going to give
Absolutely.
You one of my personal favorites. Heaven Can Wait, 1978, Warren Beatty and James Mason. I grew up watching old black and white films in the afternoon, the Million Dollar Movie or whatever. And so Here Comes Mr. Jordan, that was based on that. That's from 1941. So I've seen a ton of old movies, and I just thought that was really fun.
Good choice,
And that's why I paused. I think we actually had the same question on a prior panel. I found my old notes. Heaven Can Wait was on my list, and I also went old school. I went with A Man Who Knows Too Much, Jimmy Stewart, Hitchcock.
Yes.
And then the repeat double make of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland in the 70s, and then the other version with Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig that came out more recently.
Oh, good.
See, and I love the old original. It's hard to beat. As one of my favorites from as a child.
Okay, we'll get back to that just in a second, after we made some announcements and pay off some underwriters.
L.L. Bean is proud to support KPCW. The L.L. Bean store in Park City is filled with clothes, outerwear, and gear for time together outdoors, and staff who provide advice, answer questions, and lead local outdoor trips and tours. If it's outside, we're all in. Details at llbean.com.
So there's probably a smart speaker in your home. I don't want to say her name because I don't want to turn her on without your permission. I am married, after all. Did you know you could ask her to play KPCW? You can listen to great music, news, and information no matter where you are. As long as you have that smart speaker or KPCW app on your phone or your laptop where you can stream us online. KPCW Radio isn't limited by our broadcast signal in Summit and Wasatch County. You can take us wherever you are in the world and listen like a local.
Yes, and speaking of sequels, that I hope that I think that we're finally going to get Harrison Ford into a fourth Indiana Jones or fifth.
They already
actually
made that one.
Yeah, the fourth one. And we're just all hoping that the fifth one is going to be better than the fourth. Yeah, you know, that it's not going to have the
can't be hard to do.
Yeah,
the crystal skull, right?
Yeah, crystal skull. Yeah, yeah no. You know, I mean, number one, no Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, and we don't have Indy surviving a nuclear blast in a fridge. So,
yeah, that was interesting.
Oh, man. But let me just mention a couple of my favorites for remakes. And Mark nailed it, one of my favorites, which was the 70s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which was the update of... where the original was in a small California town, and they updated it to the 70s with San Francisco and all these self-actualizing navel-gazing cults, which is really intriguing because they, in that version, it was hard to tell when they were taken over by the pods.
Very clever.
Yes, and another good one was the remake of The Fly, which was definitely an improvement. Remember the original?
Oh, I loved the original. I saw it so many times.
It is classic when the little fly with a human head is caught in a spider.
Help me.
Shaped
my life.
Yeah.
You guys are freaking me out.
Mentally scarring. But the remake by David Cronenberg, who was always obsessed with the kind of the decay and the and the mutations and changes to the body, and Jeff Goldblum turning into the fly, and
body horror.
Oscar-worthy performance there. But
wonderful.
Yeah.
Do we have time to talk about A Star Is Born, since that's kind of a recentish remake?
Remake? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Only if we can spoof the song, like at the next intermission. When we play one of the Star Wars spoof. Have you seen the Star Wars spoof of the song?
No.
I'll play it for you on the break.
Of Shallow, or what song?
Yeah.
I need to hear that. Hmm. I'm just interested what you guys think. I mean, there's been four versions. They're all pretty seminal. Which do you think is the best? So we have 1937 with Janet Gaynor and Frederick March, 1954, Judy Garland, James Mason, and then we have kind of the campy 1976, Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson, and then the latest in 2018, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Maybe I'm just the only one obsessed with the story, but do you guys have any thoughts on that? Yeah. Or
I have seen only about two of the four you mentioned. I'd vote for the Janet Gaynor and Frederick March. Streisand, I was not too, it was just so-so. Although in the category of what might have been if they had only allowed Elvis to play the male lead.
Oh, interesting. My apologies goes out to Jen Kimball Bailey, who works here. She loves the Barbara Streisand version, seen it 300 times, she claims. So we'll put in Jen's vote for the 1976.
Okay, but Emily, do you have of the versions that you've seen, do you have a vote?
Well, I haven't seen any of them. Why did they make four versions of the same story?
You know what? It's not my favorite story. I don't know. It's kind of a pathetic story. It's like, let's not do that.
I guess it's Romeo and Juliet. They just love to make that.
Over and over again.
It's the male ego.
It's a bridge to your spoiler. Different ways to do the ending. They all pick different ways to...
To have the guy kill himself,
No, but there's more like seven, I think. And you're missing the best one. None of the above. I'm going to vote for 2003's A Star Is Born Again from the Simpsons episode.
I have to go watch that.
Flanders escorts a sexy starlet, guest voice Marissa Tomei.
We talked about this last year.
I think we even played a little segment.
That is a must-see. Well, my vote goes out for the 1954 Judy Garland, James Mason. So are all over the board.
It is a classic.
Wait, so if I can only watch one, is that the one you're suggesting?
I suggest you watch that one and then compare it to the newest.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember why I was not interested in seeing that. I think
Because it's sad.
Because it's sad, but really also sad. Everyone was like, this movie is so great, and I'm one of those who's like, I'm not going to buy into that hype.
Well, whenever there's music involved, I'm usually, being drawn to go see that.
I think Hollywood is in love with that story. The whole idea of the established star, sliding down, and the new, and the rookie, attaining stardom, and that just appeals to their, their egos and their sense of romance and tragedy.
Yeah, and just like you mentioned, Rick, about how the recent Tarantino movie is such a snapshot of Hollywood in the 50s. The 1954 version, I think, is kind of highly regarded as one of the best golden era depictions of what Hollywood was like.
Well, before our time runs out here, I wanted to have the panel talk about, I gave you a special homework assignment.
Rick.
Yes, and this was in the category of some upcoming films that a lot of people are interested in or horrified by, but there was just this tremendous viral reaction to the trailer to Cats.
I watched this morning, Rick. I put it off as long as I could, and mouth agape. Why? We've gone too far. CGI does not need to be applied to every single thing, and I haven't seen the original Cat. There's a film also, right? Is there a film version of the stage show?
Yeah.
So
what you saw was the trailer for the film version.
Is there another film version? Is this a remake?
No.
It's not.
So there's a Broadway show.
Right.
And then there's somebody filmed basically the Broadway show.
Okay.
And this is a movie based on the story, which there is actually not a story, but of Cats.
So one time, maybe like 5 years ago, I started watching the filmed version of the Broadway show on YouTube. It is posted in its entirety on YouTube for some reason. And I think I got through the first part because they had to break it up into like, I don't know, five different parts. And why is this show is what I
that's a
don't
really
understand.
Question. So I'll wait in here because I could write a novel about this. So Cats to me is like the Nutcracker. There is no plot. Like you're literally watching a parade of different candies, to celebrate the girl who threw her shoe at the head of a rat. I mean, there's really not a plot. That's about as much of the story. Cats is the same. The story is basically the cats gather for once a time a year to have a big ball, and they choose one cat to kind of be resurrected to their next life. And so it's literally a parade of different cats.
That's weird.
Here's why we should be chosen, because we're really fun.
Cats in the 10th life.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, honestly, you say why? I've thought about this. First of all, I think if you love dance, like I can enjoy the Nutcracker. It's not my favorite thing to go see, but you go for the dance, and that's why you would see Cats as well. But I honestly think that this thing has carried on for so freaking long on the back of Memory, the song.
Which Jennifer Hudson sings in this newest version. And she, of course, is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the only reason why you would go to see this film.
To see the performances. Yeah. And Idris Elba's dreamy eyes. Yeah, and what they're calling the digital fur technology. So they're not doing like the 70s, you know, leg warmer,
yeah,
furry.
The furry.
Mm-hmm. So
Mark? Well, I think the cast is what's going to carry this film and bring crossover appeal audiences to it. In addition to the choreographer from Hamilton, as I understand, is behind it, that alone will bring I have to see this film. If you have that creative bent, you want it, you have any, whether you have nostalgia or you have these connections through the cast or the Hamilton dance. So I think, I think it's going to be a smash.
I thought that too about the cast list, because at the end of the trailer, they're like, Jason Derulo, Taylor Swift,
James Corden.
Taylor Swift, yes.
Just an all-star cast. And my thought was, well, why don't they just put all these amazing people on Broadway instead of having me see them in the theater?
But that's the theme of 2019. Why don't we put all these amazing people in a good film? And, from everything from, Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen and...
Oh, the journalist.
What was that called?
Impossible Love Story.
The rom-com.
To even Tarantino's. I mean, we've had film after film this year saved by great casting and a great cast with subpar direction and subpar writing. And I think you're going to see that trend continue, although I think the fall overall looks way more promising. There's literally something for everyone. If you can't find a film to like this fall, you don't like film.
Yeah, well, there's some interesting things coming up, and I think the one that got this fall is Scorsese's The Irishman, which is taking him back to the gangster mode, and it's got De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci. I wish they should have found a way to get Leonardo.
That's the throwback film. That's for if you're the privileged white male that longs for the old gangster movie, you get in that category. But you have Joker, Cats, you have The Lighthouse with Defoe and Robert Patterson, you have Harriet, finally a biopic on Harriet Tubman, Ford versus Ferrari, Downton Abbey comes to the big screen. Bombshell on the Fox debacle, and Sam Mendes returns with 1917. If you need a World War One war bot,
who doesn't? And,
during Christmas, we always do. So,
or alternately,
and don't forget Star Wars.
Oh yes,
for those of us with micro.
Yeah,
and chloridin levels above 2,000.
Yeah, and when the panel reconvenes in December, we'll be talking more about the next Star Wars and to see if they can fix what the last couple have done.
And I have
Force
one more
or
to
no
throw.
No Force
yes.
Ghosts.
No one's ever really gone, Mark.
And I have one more to throw in the mix. If you want a period piece, female empowerment story. See The Aeronauts, which has Eddie Redmayne, Felicity Jones, and Himesh Patel. I love all three of those actors so much. Early ballooning story, and one of the central figures is a woman.
Eddie Redmayne's at the top billing. Come on, Wendy.
No, I think Felicity.
What's up with that?
I actually think Felicity Jones is the top build. Yeah.
I loved Felicity Jones in Rogue One. Speaking of good new Star Wars movies.
Yes.
There's one that I wanted to throw out there. It's called Jojo Rabbit by Taika Waititi. He's the guy who did the latest Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. But also What We Do in the Shadows, which I think premiered at Sundance.
Yes, one of the best.
Great film. But this one is a World War II satire with a German boy who finds a Jewish girl in his attic and consults with his imaginary friend who happens to be Adolf Hitler. So I think it's going to be a great
film.
With
Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, plus Scarlett Johansson.
Something for everybody. Continue.
Yes. I think it'll be a great film.
Okay.
My two sleepers? One more.
Yeah.
Plug. Parasite did great at Cannes. Got a lot of buzz. This Korean film just back into that category of non-horror horror film, you know, comically violent, you know, mm-hmm. I think, and Pain and Glory. Pedro Almodovar comes back with his muse, Penelope Cruz, you know, two films really to watch out for.
And Antonio Banderas. And Banderas, yeah. Okay. We'll be back for a sign-off in just a moment.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO, and DeJuria Center.
KPCW shows are now available for podcast. Either through your iTunes or Google Play apps, just search KPCW and download your favorite public affairs show so you can listen whenever and wherever you want. From the local news to mountain money, from this green earth to the mountain life, Cool Science Radio, The Morning Mix, and Cata Domingo. KPCW Podcasts, just another way you can listen like a local.
Okay, well, just two more suggestions for me. One is the Cats trailer kind of looks like a remake of Island of Dr. Moreau, which is the one where a mad doctor mutates animals into humans.
You're absolutely right.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't peg it. You've done
now
it.
Now, that's
again,
a remake,
Rick,
that we should have had.
Yeah, and
the worst list.
Yeah, and my another suggestion for a remake is. A remake of Predator set during Autumn Aloft, and Arnold says get to the balloon instead of get to the chopper. But we'd like
going
to,
out on a high note.
Yes,
like to, thanks.
On
Rick.
A high note, yes. From a
I thought you were going to go with that ski film stuck in the ski chair with the wolves underneath. Hot air balloon with wolves underneath,
yeah,
and you just you can't land.
Like
Frozen, yeah, which we'll talk about in December maybe. But I'd like to thank our own aeronaut Emily Means, who was just up in the balloon yesterday.
Yeah, and there was a predator underneath.
A predator,
me.
Yes, yeah.
And wolves.
Could be. it was invisible.
It was a great time.
Yeah, Wendy Gourley and Mark Harrington, and as always, we can't do it without the person who ran our board, Monica Goodner, who is also our special emotional support DJ to get us through this hour.
Couldn't have made it without her.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. We'll reconvene the panel in early December. And this is KPCW, Park City, 91.7.